Burn it.
Now we're recording.
That's like serious blackmail. Blackmail.
Good thing we aren't doing that live.
Welcome to Rated Gen X, where three former computer nerds bust out the modem and log into some of the iconic films of our lives.
All right, so each week we're going to rewatch, or maybe watch for the first time, an 80s film through a modern lens.
And then we'll see how our random access memories, RAM, stack up. Nice, look at that. Aaron.
I see what you did.
We're making all sorts of bad computer puns and computer jokes this week. So why don't you just get us out of the suspense and remind us
what
movie we picked for this week.
This is going to be a particularly painful episode for me, I think. But I'll keep you guys in line. I picked War Games 1983.
Yeah. All right. To me, this is a very important movie growing up. Computers were coming into our lives at a certain point, thinking that this was the first time I realized, oh, computers are going to decide a lot of things in our future. That was the first thing. I mean, the government is like relying on computers for big decisions. Like, I remember thinking, oh, this is going to be a skill we have to learn. And then the other thing is just like worth noting is we grew up during the tail end of like Cold War. So this movie's situated kind of perfectly for our lives. So I remember it being like, we could all die in a nuclear war.
I picked it because, I mean, even though I've never seen it, I mean, you know what it's about. You generally get the gist of what it's about. I've read about it. I know, you know, it's been kind of, and there have been more and more references to it lately with AI emerging with all these things we're looking at, and it's becoming a reality. I feel like there was a long time where the whole concept of AI and this sort of machine learning, and I was a doubter of how much power it could have. And much more recently, I mean, I'm seeing evidence that no, there's no reason to doubt how much power machine learning can have. And all this sci-fi stuff that we originally some people wrote off as like silliness and just Hollywood scripting and whatever, could be reality. And that's why I picked it, because I just felt like, you know, it kind of fit in with, it was very relevant to today. So Curtis, you've seen it before though, right?
Yeah, no, I saw it, but you know, it's been like whatever decades, you know, since I've seen it. But I remember like thinking at the time, like, oh, maybe there's hope. Maybe the Russians love their children too, to quote Sting. But yeah, there was definitely that whole like, wait a minute, are we really putting these kind of decisions in the hands of computers, you know? And, you know, definitely got some ideas about what I think about the movie now compared to when I saw it then. Cause you know, we didn't have internet and all that. And, you know, the dial up and AOL connecting, the computers talking to each other, et cetera, et cetera. So it seemed like so fantastical to me, it was almost like impossible.
I do put a quote at the beginning of my mixtape on Spotify that says, you know, I think AI will probably, like, most likely sort of lead to the end of the world. But in the meantime, there'll be great companies created with serious machine learning. And this
who is that? Yeah, I was going to say that.
CEO of OpenAI. And he's like, yeah, we're all going to die. It's going to kill us in the end. You know, we're fucked. But hey, in the meantime, enjoy the ride.
We grew up in the wake of, like, our parents had duck and cover, right? Like, they lived under that first wave of the Red Scare and the Cold War fear. But for us, like, this was the reality of it. And I think the computer component was different from just the Red Scare. It was like, not only do you have to fear the other insofar as the Russians or whomever we grew up thinking were our big enemies, but we also have to fear the machines. Like, it was like, I see your Cold War and I raise you, you know, 2001 HAL. Like, it's like Dr. Strangelove and HAL. It's like a Kubrick double feature. It really deals with these really, really heavy issues. Like, I feel like this movie.
The machines. They're not just appear by themselves. So essentially it's, we are our own worst enemy is what it comes down to.
We create our own extinction.
Yeah. Like, you're worried about the rest of the world, worry about yourself.
Like, are we really trusting like that kind of stuff to automation and all that? You know, I mean,
it's much better to have Homer Simpson right at the so that's what we
right.
That's right. That's what we grew up with.
So before we jump in and watch War Games, let's talk computers.
Yes,
this is 1983. And 1983, 2 million Americans had computers in their house. And that's out of a population of more than 200 million at the time. So it's about 1% of people had a computer. I remember when we got the first computer in my household. Do y'all remember when you guys got your first computer, what it was, what it was like?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Computer in your house?
I remember. Yeah. Oh, yep. I can remember. Yeah. We're going to talk about that. We're going to watch the movie. We'll be back.
Attention, pet parent. Say goodbye to bland, unhealthy dog food. Forget about those filler-packed options from Big Kibble. No more worrying about weight gain or sluggishness. Introducing the Organic Bark Bistro Box, a first-of-its-kind meal kit for your furry friend. You gotta be fucking kidding me. Is this real? Yeah. Unlike those other so-called organic dog foods, Organic Bistro Box is a meal kit. That means you can see, touch, and feel the organic, wholesome ingredients with your own eyes. Wait, you know dogs eat food from the garbage, right? They smell each other's own assholes for fun? No?
Just read the copy.
Just read the copy? Prime cuts of tender, succulent, organic, grass-fed beef tenderloin and hand-massaged Kobe beef, richly marbled for an unforgettable melt-in-your-mouth experience that will keep your dog healthy and happy. Oh, for fuck's sake, dogs literally eat their own feces.
Read the copy.
No,
Okay, we have to bring in the closer.
I can't.
Okay, goodbye. Bring in Don.
With the Organic Bark Bistro Box, you're giving your dog the nutrition they need. Don't settle for anything less than gourmet for your pup. Order the Organic Bark Bistro Box today and treat your dog to the meal they deserve.
All right, so we are back. So Gabe asked the question. He wanted to know what was our first computer. You know what? I was thinking about it and I didn't have my first computer. Okay, so the first computers that I used were other people's computers. I remember at my elementary school, they brought in computers for like a week and then took them away.
We had
a little project and we got to use them for a week and then they took them away from us. And I mean, this would have been in the 70s. And then I had a couple friends. I grew up near Penn State University. I had a couple friends whose parents were professors and they had computers. So I used their computers. Like when I would go over to their house, I got to use their computers. But my own, like I was literally in college. It was my boyfriend's computer, my boyfriend who I ended up marrying for his computer, obviously.
No. How fast did that go?
Did you get custody? Tell me you got custody.
Right.
You got custody.
No. He had a computer. And so, yeah, that was actually my first computer. And then, of course, you know, then subsequently, and then somehow Microsoft hired me. I don't know why, this person who didn't have computers for their entire life, but I ended
what
up
kind
with
of computer
a
was
Microsoft.
It? What kind?
Oh, I don't even remember. I remember I logged in through AOL. I remember, my ISP. My ISP was AOL. I remember that. With anyone else, do you remember your first ISP? Like it was AOL. I don't know what kind of computer. I don't know. It was a piece of shit. That much I can tell you.
It was a POS. I got you.
POS.
Yeah, it was a POS. Yeah.
That's a brand, right? Curtis, what was your first computer? What'd you get?
Well, like, it's funny because you say like, you know, in 1983, 2 million people had computers. And I'm like thinking, what the hell is anyone doing? Like who was really going online or anything like that? So my first computer, I probably got in 7th and 8th grade, which was called the Atom, which was the ColecoVision brand computer. Which was such an like, so the tapes were literally cassette tapes. Mm-hmm. So like, if I tried to find like a doc, you know, I'd write my papers on it and stuff. So if I tried to find a document, like it'd be like rewinding and fast forwarding and rewinding. But yeah, literally it was the same exact kind of tapes we would make mixtapes with.
My first computer that we had back in the 80s, I don't remember exactly what year, but it would have probably been in this window, 82, 83, 84. But we had the Commodore 64,
yes,
which was if you look at it now, it is literally just a keyboard that plugged into a television monitor. And then you had to have a plug-in separate floppy disk drive to go with it. We usually played it. I used it for playing games. But you could do very basic programming on it. I remember trying to do some programming and writing of papers and things, but it was not very successful. Aaron, now that you saw the movie, even though you
The
picked
first
it,
time.
yeah, tell
Yeah,
us about
not
your
seeing it.
feelings and how it took you
I
back to the
loved
era.
it.
What's your
I
thoughts?
loved it. I loved it. First of all, okay, let me just talk about it's not even movie related, but this is the OG Ferris. Like Matthew Broderick
Yeah.
at this time, which is kind of crazy. I looked it up because he seems so much younger to me, but he's only this was made 3 years before Ferris Bueller. So this was at 83 and Ferris Bueller was 86, but for some reason
Oh.
he seems so much older than in Ferris than he is. But you see his little smart ass and he gets sent to the principal's office at the beginning and he's just like, I'm here to talk about my attitude problem. And it's just so
Again.
Ferris. He seems very much a teenager. So I love that too, because it's kind of a, when people like in the 80s, so often you would see these people who are supposed to be teenagers, but they look so old. That was so common. So, he and Ally Sheedy really do come across as teenagers. I love that part of it. I love there's I really like there was it was very I thought it was very realistic in a lot of ways. Like the part where he has to get the phone number of the place in Sunnyvale, which Sunnyvale, California, if they picked like a great that's exactly a real life tech Silicon Valley city. So they were very realistic on that. It was in some random city. And then he plugs the phone number and it's scanning, the software scanning. So many times when you see hackers get online, they're just like on movies and film, they're just like doo doo doo, few clicks and they're in. And that's not how it works. That's generally not how it works. So the fact that they show that he has to put it in and has to scan and people, this is why secure passwords are very important, complex passwords, because yeah, the longer, the more complex your password is, the harder it is to break. But anyway,
I'm going to make
yeah.
a mental note right now to change all
Right.
my passwords from pencil. It is not,
Yes.
that's totally not going to
Yes. 1, 2, 3, 4
change it to Joshua.
is not a good password. The data centers looked real. Like there's just, I looked into it and NORAD does not give tours.
Yeah. I know. It's like, what?
I saw that part. I'm like, I'm pretty sure NORAD doesn't give tours. And I looked it up and they do not give tours.
I'll tell you what
And
else would
I
happen if NORAD did give tours. They would definitely
know.
not have the thing where they're like, oops, you hit the button, the whole
Yeah,
line
right,
goes out.
exactly. It's like, you want to touch a
Australia.
button?
Oh,
Oh,
we're
yes,
in DEF
gotcha.
CON.
Just
We're in
kidding.
DEF CON. And let's do a tour.
Yeah,
Like, what
what is going on?
the
That
fuck is
scene
going on?
struck
Oops, you
me as
just killed
being,
everybody. Just kidding.
yeah, just kidding.
I know. I mean, but they had to find a way to get little Matthew out of, to sneak out, which
Yeah,
I,
right.
and yeah, so I
What a
understand
great
it's a
scene.
device. I understand why that had to be in there. They go and they visit the guy who created the program. I forget his name now. He had two
Falcon.
Falcon.
Yeah,
Falcon.
Falcon.
Yes, thank you. I like that he wasn't like this crazy, insane, mad scientist guy. He well, first of all, he's flying this pterodactyl, this remote pterodactyl. I want one of those. Oh my God. Like, I just thought that's so cool. I want a remote control pterodactyl now. But then he's just kind of a normal guy. Like, I mean, relatively normal, right?
There's a few really interesting things about him. These are just historical things. Number one is that character is actually inspired by Stephen Hawking. Yeah,
Oh,
the
really?
real life hacker that they based the David Lightman character on was in touch with Hawking at the time. So that's true. And the second, and this is even more interesting, that I stumbled upon this somewhere randomly, that John Lennon was originally in conversation with the producers to do that role before he was murdered.
Oh,
So
that would have been
they were
great.
thinking
Really?
of, I mean, imagine, no pun
Imagine, right.
maybe, John
Oh.
Lennon style character in that role.
Yeah, I wouldn't want John Lennon in that role, actually. I like
Yeah.
that it was a, I don't know, I just like that it wasn't. Sometimes there's something to be said for not having these big names, for having, like I think it would have overshadowed so many things, but.
I agree with you, Aaron. Like, this movie really hit me just wow. Like, I was blown away how much I liked it. And this one just fits right in with all of the things we're thinking about today. And quite honestly, even though the Cold War is over, we're kind of on a different precipice right now. And it's not about global thermonuclear war destroying the world, but there is something about the way AI and technology has like changed people. Like there's something deeply humanistic in this movie where there's an optimism in all the people. And I feel like as a modern audience looking at it, particularly in the era of social media, like I think there's a deep cynicism. And so I appreciated the optimism of this movie. It really showed to me, and it's not something I would have thought I'd come away from a 1983 movie about nuclear war, but instead I was like, wow, this is really optimistic. This is gives me hope for a future. And there's something about this that I'd like to try to capture. So those are my immediate thoughts. But Curtis, what do you got?
Well, first off the bat, like I had a holy shit Hollywood moment because this old friend of mine, I forgot, he directed and wrote a play I did in Hollywood that was actually produced by James Gammon of Major League and Urban Cowboy fame. But he was, you know, when those two at the very
Yeah.
beginning of the movie when the two guys come to relieve the other two guys and
Yeah.
they come out like, "You assholes are late." So my friend Gary Bissig was the first guy, the short guy, to come out and say his
Oh,
piece.
really? He was like,
And
"Oh,
welcome.
wow. That's
Yeah,
cool. I didn't forgot he
yeah,
was
and it
in
was because I remember he told me, I remember him telling me he did that, and then he was also like in Buckaroo Banzai as a guy like pushing buttons. And
it. That's pretty
so
cool.
I had one of those like, "Holy shit, I know our guy." But I absolutely totally loved the movie, and in fact, I feel like I remember when they showed NORAD. I remember when I saw it when I was a kid, being like, "Wow!" You know, I'm thinking like, you know, how long till Skynet becomes aware? You know,
Yeah.
to refer to Terminator and realize, like, but like leaving those things in the hands, like, and how easily, you know, people can screw with stuff and trick each other into the big thing that stuck out for me is how people were easily tricked into thinking something that was going on that wasn't.
Right, yeah,
Therefore,
that's
we're
a good
going
point.
to put into action something that was very real and very severe. So, you know, and it kind of made me think about like a lot of like with the identity theft and AI and hacking. I remember this friend of mine actually from college, he got busted hacking by the FBI. And you know what they did to him?
No.
His punishment was to hack for the FBI for a couple summers.
Yeah, you gotta hire, you can book him a
Because
white
the
hat hacker.
FBI is hacking
That's actually
into
very smart.
corporations and stuff. And like you, since you were so good to hack into our mainframe,
Yeah.
so instead of going to jail, you're gonna tell your parents you got awarded an internship.
Yeah,
Right.
they'll be a
Actually
white hat.
brilliant.
Be a white hat
Right. Well,
hacker.
you know, the best people to help ca catch the car thieves are former car
Right.
thieves. So yeah.
Yeah. That's
But
actually
like, and
brilliant.
this is all in the 80s, 90s. So like what's going on today now? Like, I don't know, you know, I mean, Aaron knows more about that. I mean, but like it's like it was a positive message, but it's also kind of terrifying about how much, you know, I keep thinking of Jeff Goldblum's quote in Jurassic Park, like, you know, we're spending so much time to think of what we can do, no one's stopping to think if we should do it. But I'm kind of siding with Corbin after go sweating all that adventure out, you know?
Yeah, and whoever would have thought, but yeah, no, but what you're saying, oh, and the point about Jurassic
I'd
Park
piss on a spark plug if I thought it would work.
the point about Jurassic Park is really like, yeah, I mean, when you watch Jurassic Park, it's like, yeah, like we're gonna clone dinosaurs and they're gonna be running around, like, but this legit,
Right.
like, there's some legit shit here, like, this
Yeah.
is. Like, and that's kind of, and then the thought that our fate can be in the hands of just these few people, and some of them are fucking crazy. I mean, when you talk about Skylink, it's like, wow, yeah, like there's a few powerful people who can really decide what goes on. And what's interesting, Curtis, is because when we were talking about, and before we went and watched it, you're talking about, like, you know, it was like Russians, and really the Russians aren't even a factor in this. I mean, they
Yeah.
happen to be the other player in the game, but it's not about.
Russians say we haven't
It's
launched.
not about
That's
the
it.
Cold War. It's not about the Russians. It's like we are our own
Right.
worst enemy, you
Right.
know.
The very opening scene, as you recall, is about human error, right? It's about them needing to go to machines because they don't think people have the gumption to turn the key
Right.
when the push comes to shove. But then the irony is, well, the machine will do it without thinking about it, but then in the end, the people don't believe the machine, right? So then you've got this double, it's like almost like a double negative at that point.
Right.
Because when the people are supposed to be like, the machine's telling us to do it now, the machine's going to do it. Now they're like, no, it's not real. Whereas the people at the beginning didn't know it wasn't real, and that's why they didn't do it. So it's like, it's this paradox of human error
Yeah.
causing computer error, causing human error. Like in the end,
It's
humans are fallible.
so,
Machines theoretically are not fallible, but they're also fallible, right?
but
So
they also, we
dare
can
I
learn
say
from the
it's
machines.
very meta, dare I say.
Yes. Super meta. And tying it all back.
I almost reached for a hanky because think about this. We created these machines that we taught to learn how to win the game,
Right.
right? And then we teach the computers how to learn, which is what AI is, right? At the end, the message is the only way to win is not to play.
Right.
So it's sort of like, well, holy shit, we had to like find, we had to teach ourselves, we had to create a thing to learn a thing to teach us something. Like they got learned, they got taught the lesson. We got taught the lesson
so let's
by
just...
our Frankenstein creation.
Right. And in the
so
end,
slackers,
I mean,
should be allowed to rule the world in that.
Yeah.
Because slackers should.
The United States, whatever, man.
Like, right.
And our, it's interesting because the world of most dystopian computer fantasies is that the computers ultimately decide humankind is fallible, and that's why they're going to destroy them. Like that's the theory of the Matrix and the Terminator,
right,
and all those other movies.
Parasites.
And it's all, it's funny though, because when we think about humans and why we should save humanity, in most cases the humans are the fallible creatures. Like the humans are the ones who created, sure, they can create great art, but they also created the Holocaust, right? So it is one of these very just deep moral philosophical questions. And once we gain the power, this goes to perhaps a Oppenheimer question, like once we gain the power to destroy humanity, the game's over, right? Like what else? It's only a matter of time, was kind of that thought. And this movie is 1983. Here we are, what, 40 something years later, still contemplating that, but also still very realistically living in a world where one push of a button can do that. We've still lived in that world, even in a post-Cold War world. And we still live in a world where the nuclear threat has never gone away. Like we dreamed about there being a total disarmament at some point, and that dream's long gone. There's a lot of Stranger Things borrowed from this movie.
Oh, are there? Okay.
The fixation on the video arcade at the beginning is very much like a Stranger Things. The underground lair, they have a whole bit that deals with the Russian the Russian base being underneath the mall. There's elements of that in here. There's the hacking elements where Dustin and his girlfriend, they communicate through that she's got incredible hacking skills, but they need to figure some certain things out. So there's some of that here. And some of the other technologies that I just thought were worth pointing out, right? In addition to the classic Galaga video arcade game he's playing.
Yeah.
Payphones, which, by the way, kids, were a real thing, and he knows how to hack a payphone. The modem, dialing in with a modem. And I love that he was in the secure room, but he figured out how to use the tape recorder. And
that was wild.
The cord to play back the thing. That was, all of those schemes he played are so good. Like he's ingenious, and I love that they think he must be working with the Russians.
Right.
And the idea that this is funny because I do not remember computers being used for this at the time. Obviously, they would have been, but booking an airline flight, like that seems like such a modern thing. Oh, yeah,
yeah.
Airline flight on the computer. But this idea that he hacked in and booked an airline flight is so funny and so interesting. And I was like,
yeah,
he did that. And of course, changing grades, that was the dream we all had. Like everybody dreamed of.
Well, I'm surprised you didn't try to explain the thing about the tickets. It's like, oh, we were just goofing around because I realized I could do it. Like, but there's certain things that they can't have the characters do, or suddenly the movie will end in 20 minutes,
And they wouldn't have believed him. I mean, they thought he was
working. Yeah. That's probably what, that's a good way to explain
and
it.
Did anybody catch? So the idea was that Falcon was supposed to have died, right? It wasn't that they changed identity and moved to the island and everything else. He was supposed to have died. Did it stick with you as hard as it stuck with me? Then they said, oh, he was old. He was 40.
Oh, yeah.
He was so young. He's like, no, he was 41. And
I'm
he's
still
like,
catching
oh, yeah,
my breath. I'm just, let me take a minute.
I love that.
Yeah, okay, but come on, you guys. When you were like in high school, even college, like anybody that was like over
was
30
old.
Was might as well have been 70.
I know. And bless his heart. I mean, at the time, even Matthew Broderick, as you pointed out, was already 20. So he was halfway there. He was having a midlife crisis.
Apparently. Yeah. I can't say this line in full conscience.
But that was meant to be cute. I mean, that's what they did it. That was meant to get laughs. That
meant
was
to be
definitely designed to be like.
Yeah, they were going for
it.
You. I love, by the way, this is a couple minor things, but the dad character, played by a character actor named William Bogart, will be known to people of our generation for his role in Small Wonder. He was like the busybody in that show.
Okay.
Wasn't he in Better Off Dead? Wasn't he the father in that? The awkward dad in that?
That could be as well.
Was he?
Come up. And then the NORAD commander, right? The general who you pointed out earlier. is of course most famous for of our generation again, Northern Exposure. Like I was like, oh, there he is. That's him. I love him. He's the general of Northern Exposure too.
He was
Oh,
actually in The
okay.
Big Easy. My
Yeah,
friend from
such a
college was
what a
into
great
it.
actor. And the last character actor who was the one of the nerds at the very, very beginning when he first talks to the other
Oh,
half,
yeah, in
the idea
Greece.
about the back door in the first place was Eddie Deason. He is like the ultimate nerd actor, but if you've ever seen Polar Express, he does the voice of the nerdy
I
autistic
was gonna
kid.
say, he sounds just like it's Floppenheimish.
Yeah, he's great though. So Eddie Deason, and the second I saw him, I was like, "There's Eddie Deason." So I'd forgotten he was in this. So that was like a big moment. I
Wasn't
love.
he Eugene in Greece
I loved
also?
the mom
Yes.
with the Century 21 jacket. I was like,
Yes.
what?
Yeah.
Awesome.
So many moments. That was
I'd
my
forgotten
mom.
all about this ugly, fugly. Yeah, Century 21 jackets. It was just
You
that was
want your little
awesome.
friend to come over for the barbecue
Oh,
too?
I love that too. And she was like, oh God, really? Oh,
We can
Chloe
definitely.
laughed in this. She was awesome. I loved
She was
Allie.
great.
Oh my God, what was she riding? Like, she's like, get on my bike. And she's got her motorbike. I was like, she's a badass. I
Yeah, she
loved
was
it.
cool. She was very cool. And this was an interesting role. In many films of this type, like she is not the active role, but she's definitely not a supportive role, right? She has agency in a way that many characters in this era did not. And I think she's great. I'd forgotten how good she was in this, and I was completely taken with her
Yeah,
performance.
she's underrated. She really is. And I think that I don't know, I feel like, yeah, she has a lot more talent than she was ever given credit for. And I feel like she
Yeah.
was kind of maybe born in the wrong time. I feel like Ally Sheedy,
Kind of got screwed over
she'd
by
be
the.
much more appreciated nowadays if she were,
I'm really knocked out by this. So I learned something else that during the production of the movie, two interesting things happened. One, it ends up being directed by John Badham, who is really, a terrific director. Had most notably up until this point directed Saturday Night Fever in 1977. But he replaced Martin Brest. Martin Brest had apparently been directing and all the way into production. And then, but he made the movie, and his vision was too heavy. And apparently, both like Matthew Broderick and Ali Sheedy were like really stiff and paranoid because he had them like they were doing like a spy espionage movie. Like he had them like on edge. And John Badham really understood how much fun it could be. So for whatever reason, Badham got on there and he lightened them up, and immediately their performances changed, and the studio clearly made the right choice. He brought the right touch to this movie. I was really just surprised about how good it was, how well it holds up. So many times, movies from this era, the technology just looks corny as shit. These don't hold up well. They feel super fake. And this one is like pretty on point. I mean, there's a few corny things, but it's pretty on point. Like the NORAD stuff is pretty convincing. Apparently the machine is not called the Whopper,
I know
but
that. I was that
that was
kind of
kind of.
like, are we really doing that? This is a
Yeah.
little goofy. We call it the Whopper.
Okay.
Cha-ching.
Actually, we being the compute people who behind all this, we come up with stupid names for shit.
Sure.
Like really. Like I'm like, no, that's actually kind of on brand. Like that you might call that you might name a computer the Whopper. Like that actually is on brand. So
They wanted
yeah.
it to feel that it had gravitas, I think.
But
So
I was
they
like,
went with Whopper, but it's not that far off. I
but
actually.
the music during the opening credits, like it's got that kind of intense and there's military, almost 1812-y kind of stuff, but there's also a little bit of lighthearted funness to it too. So you kind of know and it fits into that bucket of movies that I have, sort of like with Stephen King stuff and Stranger Things, where it's like it's the kids that have the shit straight and the adults are idiots and don't know what understand what's going on and can't really see the big picture.
That was one of the criticisms at the time. One of the, I think it might have been Leonard Maltin. Somebody said exactly that. He was like, "This movie is dumb. They make all the adults look like dum-dums." And I was like, "Yeah, that's not so bad." And in fact, the computer programmer lets the kid figure it out. Like, I love the way that
Yeah, that was a
happened.
cool bit back and
Yeah,
forth between that.
I also remember, this is going to sound very distinct. There are two other things in this movie that I can't explain why they left such an impression, but they did. There's the dinner scene at the very beginning where the mother doesn't cook the corn. They're eating raw corn. But if you remember, the father butters the corn by buttering a piece of bread and then rubbing the corn on the bread. And I remember being like, that's genius. The other just side note is there is a lot of like symbolism in this movie. There's a lot of like really interesting, just I thought about the name even of the characters, right? Like that he's David Lightman. Like this idea that he's called the Light Man is kind of interesting. Like he's going to be the light. He's going to be the savior. And then the Joshua.
Getting light on the truth of the situation.
Yeah, and the idea that the computer is called Joshua, which is the name of the sun, but it's also like you think about Joshua trees in the desert surviving. And then, you know, I think Joshua in the Old Testament sort of followed Moses and did, like, it's that type of thing. Like the film is filled with
Cave
this
is
type
going deep.
Of death.
Like, Cave is going
yeah,
deep.
It got deep.
Okay,
it got
wow.
deep. We have buttering corn with bread, but we also have deep symbolism. We run the gamut, and that's
wow.
what we're here for.
That is amazing.
The pterodactyl thing, like I thought I was seeing things and I had to rewind it because I was like, what the hell?
Me you know, too. I was like, why is there a pterodactyl flying around Seattle? This movie just jumped the shark. What happened here? And then I realized it was a radio control.
Yeah, because I was like,
and then I was like, oh, I must have one now. That's really where it went immediate. Like, this is ridiculous. They've lost me to, oh my God, that's the best thing in the world. I need one.
But like the whole, and then obviously the doctor guy talks about the whole extinction of the dinosaurs and any creature that weighed more than 50 pounds was completely wiped out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, and his whole kind of give up thing. But all it made me think of, it's like, well, the dinosaurs didn't have a hand in their own extinction.
Ooh,
because that's the because like you know it's about the nuclear war and AI and all that, but it also like this movie today thinks about like the power we have human beings are doing to set them up to make themselves extinct, whether it's giving too much control to AI and climate change and every other goddamn thing and greed, et cetera, leading to our downfall. And you know, and I think that there is definitely some mentality of people today that are like, yeah, fuck it, I'm gonna just go enjoy the ride because we're screwed anyway.
Well, and Curtis, you've heard my theory on this too, which is I think the dinosaurs played the long game. Because if you think about climate change, it's fossil fuels that are causing it. So the dinosaurs get their revenge slowly, but eventually they're gonna knock us out. Like we thought we were smarter than them and they're dumb and we like the dinosaurs are extinct and they're like, just you wait. You'll get
they're
your
coming back.
Your time's coming.
Revenge is in your tank right now.
It'll be them and the machines. That's all that's gonna be left.
You know is a lie.
What'll be ingenious? I'm gonna mash up two Spielberg movies.
Okay.
In the future, the AI are gonna create, like they're gonna find the genetic construction of the dinosaurs and they're gonna create dinosaurs to roam the earth. When it's just AIs left on the planet, they're gonna reignite the dinosaurs. It's gonna be Jurassic Park in the future. It's gonna be just robots and real dinosaurs.
There's a screenplay.
And then Matthew Broderick will still be around.
I need to be. Yeah.
By the way, wouldn't it have been great if when the helicopter showed up, it was freaking Cameron in there? I got you first.
That's what, speaking of the helicopter, so that was cracking me up because like, okay, so in the beginning of the movie in NORAD, the guys who, after, you know, the shit goes awry and whatever, they have to fire those guys. They come in on this helicopter that basically looks like a traffic copter. Basically, I'm like, what kind of helicopter? These two, I don't know if they're CIA or what, they're government, they're feds. And they come in on this basically traffic copter. But then the professor, or whatever he is, or the programmer guy, Faulkner or whatever, he has a military helicopter. And I'm like, I don't understand that.
They must have screwed up the delivery days with the
they must. Okay,
just, shit, we got to shoot this.
To me, that's what this show is all about, man. It's us revisiting those movies, and this is a great choice. So
we're gonna do our official ratings, and
I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm
doing.
Okay,
I got it. I'm going straight in.
All right. Well, we're gonna take a break first.
After the break.
After we break.
Attention, pet parent. Say adios to bland, unhealthy, so-called organic dog food. Introducing Kitty Boot Artisan Dog Food Homemade Meals, a revolutionary meal kit for your furry friend. Unlike those phony organic dog chows, Kitty Boot Artisan Dog Food Homemade Meals is an experience. You can see, touch, and feel the gourmet ingredients right in your hands. Every kit comes with our custom combination of cotton candy, pop rocks, a cherry slushy,
a hot dog, and a wiffle ball bat. Here's the trick, old dog. Feed our custom ingredients to your child. Wink, wink, or eat it yourself, champ. Then let the magic unfold. Our patented process lets your stomach do the work, transforming everything into a delectable slurry. After 30 minutes, it's bat time. Do a dizzy bit spin, then run 30 feet, and then boot it. Watch your pup lap up the perfectly blended goodness. Don't fall for other organic meal kits. Choose Kitty Boot Artisan Dog Food Homemade Meals for the steaming pile of warm nutrition your dog craves. Order now!
Okay, and we are back. Yeah, and now is when we rate the movie.
We're gonna rate it.
Oh, we gotta, yeah, man.
I'm gonna throw a rating at this one. Now the only question is DEF CON 1 the best or the worst?
DEF CON 1, we're at peace at DEF CON 1, right?
No.
No, that's what I thought. Before
I was confused. Our moon nuclear war.
For years, I thought DEF CON 1 was the best.
Yeah, DEF CON 1 means war. So DEF CON 5 is the peace. That's what we're aiming for. But I want to give it the best, like the hottest number, which technically would be DEF CON 1. But if I give it DEF CON 5, it seems weak. But that's the peaceful answer. So I'm going to give it DEF CON 5 because it's like the most. But that's the top peak in the DEF CON scale. So I'm giving it 5 DEF CONs.
Yeah. Just getting deep with the Joshua Tree references.
Yeah, we had a police sting reference and a Bono reference in the same podcast, so I might have to tag out as well.
Wow. Nice.
Wow.
How many ratings? Wow. What's your ratings, guys?
All right, Curtis, you go.
I think this movie was so great, especially like after not seeing it for so long, and I think it's more pertinent than ever. It's definitely now, so I'm going to give it a full frontal floppy. Full frontal floppy. Flop it out. Flop it on the table and watch it.
Did you need the wide angle lens to take your picture?
Yeah. I'm going to give it, we didn't really talk about our favorite video games. We talked about our computers, our first computers, but we didn't talk about what video games, because they had, is it pronounced Galaga?
Galaga. I love Galaga. Yeah. So what's your rating, Aaron?
I'm giving it, I'm giving it 3 Miss Pac-Mans. So
nice.
The most Pac-Mans, the most Miss Pac-Mans.
Three Miss Pac-Mans on a banana. The banana is the highest level in Miss Pac-Man.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Banana is the best fruit you can get.
I should have researched this better. Fruit. Okay.
That lines up with my full frontal floppy thing.
There you go. See what I did there? I tied it all together.
Hold on. Before you run off to the arcade, I need you to tell us about next week's film.
So next week's film, I picked, to quote this bartender I used to work with in New York, every time I go up to the bar, he'd go, "I don't hear you, Curtis, unless you knock." Which is, of course, Jeff Spicoli's younger brother's name. So I pick. Fast Times at Ridgemont.
Yeah.
And the mixtape is all over the planet. So
awesome. Why'd you pick it, Curtis?
I just feel like.
As if we need to ask.
What's that?
As if we need to ask.
If you need to ask.
Well, just indulge. I mean, you know, why?
But you know, it's an interesting thing because that's a movie that I think when I saw it, it was like, this is what I have to look forward to as a teenager. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, it's definitely the mixtape is going to be pretty, pretty wild out there. Got the Dream Police, got some cars in there, some Blue Oyster Cult.
With your Blue Oyster Cult, do you have more cowbell? Do we have enough cowbell? With the
I need more cowbell. I got a fever, and the only cure is more cowbell.
I'm super psyched for. I'm super psyched for Fast Times. This one might get a little political, y'all. So there's a lot to talk about. I think it's time though. We need a catchphrase, Curtis. What's a catchphrase?
Oh. All right, Hamilton.
What is he doing? I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on right now.
We're looking for a catchphrase to talk out the show. We need a good catchphrase.
I don't know what
we need
that
a good closing
was
catchphrase.
Just, but not like guttural noises. Like it has to be it should be words, I think.
You can never win a tic-tac-toe, apparently. Who knew?
I'm going to cut it now. Cut.
Boom.
Rated Gen X is written and produced by Gabe Wardell, Aaron O'Reilly, and Curtis Eames. Post-production by Gabe Wardell. Microphones by Sonic Presence. Craft Works and Techniques by Ryan Thomas Johnson. If you like Rated Gen X, tell a human friend. Did anything we say in this episode trigger you? Tell us about it. What other movies should we do? Let us know, person. Instagram and TikTok and YouTube are all open for business 24/7. Just log in and type to your heart's content. And if none of that makes sense to you, you can email us using your AOL account at hello@ratedgenxpod.com. To listen to Aaron's mixtape inspired by War Games, visit the show notes on ratedgenxpod.com or find the mixtape on Insta. Thank you for listening to Rated Gen X. This hereby concludes our broadcasting day.
All right, guys.
Yeah, I think we got a show. We got two in the can.
All right. Two in the can.